that story about the chicken and the eagle. Jerry Fankhauser tells where the eagle is lost from the eagle tribe and is born among chickens. And the chickens don't know anything about raising eagles, so the chickens say, well, we found this little baby eagle, you know, we'll take him in, you know, we'll raise him. So around puberty, I don't know, some other eagles fly over and say, and look at this little eagle walking around like a chicken with all these chickens. And the eagle said, well, what are you doing walking around? You are an eagle. You're meant to fly. Well, why was the eagle not flying? No one told him he was an eagle. He was raised by chickens. So you and I are raised on Earth where everybody says, no, you're completely limited by time and space. And you're just, what are you talking about? You're limited by time and space. And you know, you're just going to have to compete to get ahead. And there are only so many resources and you can't have all of them. And if you win, I hope you can deal with the guilt because somebody else is going to lose because you won. Ha! And if somebody else wins, forget it because there won't possibly be enough room for you. And you may as well try, but you better try hard because you're pretty inadequate the way you begin. But maybe if you buy enough, maybe if you get enough education, just maybe you'll be good enough to fit into the system, although there aren't that many jobs anyway. But by the way, you better hurry, because in the midst of all this, while you're doing so hard to get enough degrees to make in the system, you're getting older. They're complete. Right? And we buy into it. And we buy into it. We just thought, well, we're just trying so hard. We're just trying so hard. And then there's this other way of looking at it, which is none of this is true. It's a drama that we've completely bought into. It's an illusion that we completely buy. And we try to make the illusion better. We try to fix it. We figure if we wear the right clothes, if we just organize enough. Right? If I have, you know, it's all very organized now. I have a file of facts and I'll be... And I'll learn their jargon and I'll wear their clothes. You know, and somehow I'll learn to make it in that system. But that system is based on the notion that you don't deserve to win. That's the core belief, is that no one deserves to win. And every once in a while, it lets somebody win. But then, of course, what it wants to do after it lets a person win is to shoot them down. It's a sick system. It's a corrupt system at its core. That doesn't mean there are some corrupt people out there. It's not about that. It's about corrupt thinking, which exists in all of us, which is the ego self. And then there's the alternative vision. And the alternative vision is that we are spiritual beings. This is not who we are. We all feel alien here, as we were saying last night, because we are alien here. This is not our home. We come from heaven. And we're all angels. That's who we are. And we've taken on these clothes as a disguise in a way. And we're here to heal this place. And we are healed in the process. The Course says you're not perfect or you wouldn't have been born. But it is our mission to become perfect here. And our evolutionary elder brothers are like way showers. It's like I was saying, this is all the stuff I talk about in Return to Love. You know, if you are a painter and Picasso comes into the room and Picasso says, would you like me to spend a couple of hours with you and like look at your drawings and, you know, help you out, show you a few things? What art student would say, no, I want to do it myself? And if you're learning to write, you read Dostoevsky, you read Tolstoy, you read great writers. If you're learning, if you want to be a musician, you listen to Beethoven, you listen to Mozart, you listen to Bach. And if you want to improve your consciousness, you look to the people who have already improved theirs. Jesus and those like him are geniuses at the way they use their minds and hearts. The way Shakespeare was a genius with words. My girlfriend once said to me, she's a great musician, she's a songwriter, she's a wonderful musician. And she said to me, I have a really difficult time when you talk about surrendering my career. She said, because I, you tell me surrender my career, give it to God, to you. She says, how do I know he doesn't want me to be an accountant? And I said to her, why would he? Why would he? Wouldn't he rather someone who understands numbers and math be an accountant? You know, if there is a God, he's not an idiot. I think if you have musical talent, that's a bit of a clue. Right? A bit of a clue what he wants you to do. What makes your heart sing? It's like when Joseph Campbell used to say, follow your bliss. If something really makes a heart sing, that means we have passion behind it. If you have passion to write a novel, then it's a pretty good bet the universe would like that. Because where we are performing, the Course in Miracles says happiness is a method of conversion. So that which really makes us light up sometimes when something comes up, and all of us, by the way, are coded for brilliance. No one among us has any more or less potential for brilliance. That's why recognizing that, that you have potential for brilliance, is not arrogant. It's very humble. We have infinite power. This is a power in us, but not of us. So it's nothing to take personal credit for, and it's nothing to take personal blame for. You know, even I had an incredible, talking about raising children, I had an incredible moment with my mother and my daughter. But this was just about a few months ago. I'm talking on the phone to my mother. And my daughter, and my mother is very sincere and very devoted to her grandchildren as well as to her children. And my little girl, 3-year-old, comes in. And I say, honey, you're so perfect. You're so fabulous. You're so cute. You're so wonderful. You're so perfect. And my mother says, Marianne, watch what you're saying to that child. Because in her mindset, that's a bad thing to tell her because she'll be puffed up and full of herself. Now, in my way of looking at it is for her to think she's absolutely fabulous, absolutely wonderful. By the way, honey, so is every other little boy and girl. You are absolutely perfect. You are absolutely fabulous. You are absolutely beautiful. So are all the other children as well. Most of us are on a roller coaster ride based on childhood conditioning. I'm better than. No, I'm worse than. I'm better than. No, I'm worse than. None of us are any better than anyone else, and none of us are any worse than anyone else. The Course in Miracles says all of the children of God are special, and none of the children of God are special. Now, as we've discussed plenty, because we talked about it all night last night, it's heavy times on the planet, you become clear, and He has a lot of work for you to do. Right? I mean, as we become more healed and whole ourselves, a larger and larger piece of the garden is given to us. And we will, although we achieve greater and greater joy as we are unburdened and these hideous places inside of us are unlocked, we also, because as the Course in Miracles says, the closer we grow to God, the closer we grow to our natural talent of protecting our brothers. So the more healed and whole we get, the more, you know, like last night we used the image of like Noah's Ark and we're all building a golden boat. You know, we're building a beautiful structure with which we can rise above any rains or storms. But at the same time, even though we find our joy from building that boat in consciousness by being the people that we are meant to be, by very nature of the fact we're building the boat, we're also very aware that this boat must be built because we live in very serious times. This is really great beauty of the Jewish religion, this idea of making this world a better place. That it is the responsibility of the human being to make the world a better place. So if you get, you know, that was one of the reasons we hold on to our weaknesses. One of the reasons we hold on to our bull. One of the reasons we hold on to, you know, the patterns that keep us small and weak is because we're even though we suffer from those dysfunctions, they frighten us less than standing up fully in the world. Because it's a misery that we know, it's a misery we're comfortable with, we sort of have friendships based around it, victimization talk is a little bit easier. And it's not just victimization talk, I mean, we really suffer from this thing, so we do deserve pity from ourselves. But the issue is, don't you also deserve from yourself to do what it takes to get past it? But what I'm talking to you about it for now is let's not even say the prayer unless you know in your heart you're really willing to give it up. Because the Course in Miracles says God will not, cannot go against what the prayer of your heart is. So if you say a prayer and say, Dear God, please take this character defect away from me, but really, you're so attached to it because you have such an investment in it, then it will seem to you like God doesn't answer your question, doesn't answer your prayer. Is there anybody here who can share with us, who can say an area where you get that you still use it? That you still have an investment in it, and that you might not want to let it go. Yes, ma'am? Arrogance. Arrogance. And what? How does that play out? What do you use it for?
I use it to cover up my low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. So the answer to that really would be to recognize who and what you truly are, right?
Uh-huh.
Arrogance does keep the light out of your life because it keeps other people from loving you, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's a way that you separate yourself. But why would you not want to give that up?
I do, but I can see that of all the things that are wrong, that arrogance is one that I'm having difficulty with as I look at it, because it protects me from feeling the potential of being left alone.
But God can handle that part. Of course, your self-hatred does not outwit the Lord. Right? So God can handle that. And if you can just say to me, and the only reason to me is because I'm another human being, if you can say to me honestly, knowing that there are other human beings sincerely seeking in this room as well, that if a power greater than you could remove it from you, you would like it removed. Can you say that?
If a power greater than me could remove it from me, I would like it removed.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool that you did that. I didn't even mean for you to have to do that.
I'm having trouble with it because it's very frightening.
It's very frightening.
To really let go of something openly and honestly.
Are you a student of A Course in Miracles?
No, I haven't been.
Well, you know, whether it's as a student of The Course in Miracles or any other serious path, none of this will play out in our lives in any real meaningful way without daily spiritual practice. And that's what last night's talk was about. I mean, you can't take just one little part and say, well, this is my arrogance, or this is my greed, or this is my whatever, and say, I just want to fix that. I don't want to heal my, I don't want to really become a completely new and different person. Can I just stay who I am and have that fixed? But no, you can't stay who you are and have that fixed. It doesn't work that way. The only way that we can drop any of these things is through complete radical renewal. Jesus is not arrogant because he is so advanced, he knows that everybody else is just like he is. Arrogance, by definition, means that you know nothing. Because if you think that you're better than other people, that's how much you don't know. But you can't just get that little piece of wisdom and have it fit in anywhere. It fits into a bigger picture, which is your becoming the Christ itself. And the Christ itself is not arrogant, because how can it be better than an aspect of energy, which it is? Other people are you. You know, a friend of mine said to me the other day, she said, what am I supposed to do about something? And I was bringing up an ethical question. She said, well, what am I supposed to do? I said, that's the ego question. What am I supposed to do? The issue, the masculine side of the brain, the left side of the brain, is what am I supposed to do? The issue sometimes is not what am I supposed to do, but how can I have a deeper peace and understanding with what is? And you are seeking that. And because you are seeking that, that in itself is the answer. That you will have a different experience of this. So I, as a human being, certainly support you in having that. When we talk about relationships, I think we'll get more into that. Anybody else want to say anything? Yes.
I have this style that I think hinders me, and that's a rushing, kind of driven style mm-hmm. all the time. And I say I want to give it up, but it's like, but how would I get it all done?
Can you really see though that it does not help you get it done because because of that you cannot as easily build allies. Because of your style, it pushes other people away who then won't want to help you. And that increases your sense that you have so much to do because, after all, you have to do it all yourself. And you do have to do it yourself because nobody else wants to be around. Right? That makes sense? So what you really come to understand is that in that more relaxed state, remember, Gandhi did very little. I mean, he was lying down most of the time. And the British left India. The person of personal power is not necessarily the person who does so much, the person around whom things get done. When you look at any energy system in any business, let's say, and you look at the boss, the top of the pyramid, is often not as busy as a lot of people in the energy system below them. They have advanced. Not regress, but advance to the point where their main function is in consciousness. They hold the space for the whole thing. And in their presence, the human energies come together and the work gets done. And the most important aspect of the leader is that they hold the space for things to get done. In fact, that's something you see that with Clinton beginning to learn that. He's nice to do so much, but he wasn't holding a vision. And a lot of people thought, well, just hold the vision. Just hold the vision for us, please. Right? Isn't that what happens? So our dwelling in a certain place, yes, it's like the difference between the tortoise and the hare. Certain things will not get done as quickly, but what you're doing is building relationships and you're building alliances. You see, if people are loyal to you and people like you, then ultimately they will perform for you. Does that make sense? So does it make sense enough that you recognize that you would like to give up that driven style because it doesn't help you?
Yes. How about procrastination? I find that I put off doing things that maybe if I just did them, they wouldn't appear to be something that I needed to procrastinate.
Totally, and you totally get that that's just something that you're doing, like you. These are all the things that we're doing to keep us from being at 100%. That keeps you from being 100%. That keeps you from being 100% probably if you rebirthed or whatever. There was probably something about the birth canal and you waited before you came out or something like that. All of which is valid. Hey, listen, I believe in that stuff. I mean, I'm not saying that's not true either. Because I think those things probably are true, absolutely. My point is merely that so, not so what, but now that you know that, what now? Which is, dear God, will you take that away? Absolutely. You're procrastinating is means. Okay, if I answer it when it happens, then I live fully. It's the impeccable life. It was like when I was talking last night about procrastinating. I have a friend. The friend is very ill. The friend called, oh, I'm going to go see him, and I don't get it done. I procrastinate. The guy dies before I get there. And this happened to me several times, okay? Now, what was happening? What would the impeccable self do? The impeccable self, my life is the life I want it to be. I do it when the issue comes up. It's like riding a wave. We all have that in our lives. The wave comes, do you ride it? Well, if we're procrastinating, if we're lazy, if we're tired, if we're busy, whatever it is, there's always an excuse, right? We just don't ride the wave when it happens. It's a way of saying, I do not want to live at 100%. It's a way, I cannot bear the life of 100%. It's just too much for me, just living at 100%. Now, you and I can talk about why we don't want to live at 100%, and that's because love scares us more than fear does. Because fear is what we know. The Christ self is the self that we fear, not the ego self. We all understand that, right? But if you're a point when you get, okay, if I procrastinate, I do that all the time, I cannot live the life I want to live, if in fact we want to live 100%. So it's about your saying, okay, I do that. Now, my issue on that was not exactly procrastination. It doesn't matter exactly what somebody's, what gets us to it. The point is that we see that in ourselves and we say, God, I can't change it by myself. This is where 12 steps are so powerful. That you recognize you can't change. You would have changed it by now if you could by yourself. Am I right? You're an adult. If you could have, you would have. That's why it's so crazy to judge people. They're not people that you don't walk around saying, oh, I want to be driven today. Right? I mean, if you really look at it, you can't help but have compassion for yourself why you got that way. Because you fear. It's all fear. The Course in Miracles says any of the ego is fear. You fear that if you act any other way, that the work won't get done. Right? You don't know how to be the self that you could be and still have the needs met. It's just where you stuck, the wires got crossed. And same with you. Now, with you, it's an issue of do you want to be as glorious as you would be if you showed up for life? And whether it's that your mother took drugs during giving birth to you or whatever it is, all we know is that you ended up with something from your birth, from your parents, from something, afraid to show up for life. Am I right? Yeah.
Are you saying that blaming something else could be the reason for my procrastination?
No, I'm not talking about blaming anybody at all. No. I'm just talking about what's keeping you. I'm saying what makes us procrastinate is, for whatever reason, I'm saying it's the opposite of blaming anyone else. It's not a matter of blaming ourselves. It's not a matter of blame. It's a matter of knowing that for whatever reason, you have become a woman who doesn't ride the wave. And you know that what we're talking about here are the things that keep us from living at 100%. One of the things that an impeccable life does, one of the things that living at 100% does, is it answers the letter. It writes the thank you note. It doesn't procrastinate. Am I right? And so what we're choosing is the impeccable life. We want that. We want the experience of it. We have to start somewhere. So we're pointing to the places where we know we're not living at 100%. And in yours, it's the procrastination. And then when I was talking about the 12-step thing, the idea of recognizing that of ourselves, we cannot stop it. That's part of what makes growing older so very, very heavy in experience. Things that you sort of thought would take care of themselves 20 years ago, or you'd get around to it or whatever, not only did not take care of themselves, but because we're getting older, they become more encrusted. Am I right?
Yep.
So what I'm talking about now is when I was referring to the 12 steps, is there is a power that can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. You can't, you know, if it's you against you, who's going to win and who's going to lose? But you say, God, I procrastinate. I don't know how to fix this pattern. I don't know. When things come up, I so quickly, so instinctively, in a fraction of a second, shift the energy and direct in the direction of slowness. I shift the energy. I do it so fast. My ego is so sly by the time I just set it up so that I'm in the direction of somehow it doesn't get handled. And by the time it gets handled, even if it ultimately gets handled, so much of the energy has complete. It's like the water in a... And that it's just completely gone down, so that even by the time I do show up, I'm showing up in such a weak way, and this is my life, I'm a C student. Am I right? But you're doing here what all of us are doing and asking God to do it for us. And that's the point of a miracle. Yes?
I've had that experience too of, you know, I just got back from vacation. I know this person's near death, but it's 4th of July weekend. I don't want to
deal with that.
And sometimes, like, I'll just think of a specific example. Like, sometimes people with dementia, it's like, I'm not going to go in that room. I don't want to go near that person. You know, that's fear or whatever. I can't handle that. And so people say, well, take care of yourself. You have to take care of yourself first. Don't, if you can't deal with that, don't deal with that. My question is, if you tune into this Christ and you are at 100%, does all that go away?
There is no bullshit like New Age bullshit. There is some au courant thinking, which is such delusional negativity, such disguised negativity. Forget the phrase, take care of yourself. Because let's talk about what's really happening there. You're about to go see a dying friend in the hospital. And some new thought person who means very well will say, you know, you really got to take care of yourself. You just can't handle that today. So you, quote, take care of yourself and you don't go see your friend in the hospital. Now, let's talk about what reality is. The reality is, when you go visit people in the hospital who are very sick, how do you feel afterwards? Better. Let's look at what the setup is here. Anybody who has had, and I've visited many, many critical people, so I know, and so have you. You go in thinking, oh, I got to help. You are blessed by people who are dying. People who are dying are Buddhas. People who are dying are saying, it is an honor, it is a privilege, it is a sacred act to go there. It is the meaning of life, therefore it is all that makes you happy. What are you supposed to do? Go to a movie? Like that'll make you necessarily feel better? Yeah, let's talk about this. What is taking care of yourself? Getting off your ass, helping somebody else in a way that is a balanced response to life. The Course in Miracles says that the teacher of God is generous out of self-interest. Once you know spiritual law, all that shifts. Because everything you give, the Course in Miracles says, you are giving to yourself. Everything you give is given back to you tenfold. Everything you withhold is withheld from you. So what somebody else might call taking care of yourself, that's the ego's line, because it's not taking care of yourself. That happened to me a little bit with my lecturing. It's very funny. When my book came out and I got so busy and stuff like that, and people around me were really trying to help me because my schedule was so busy. It was crazy. It was too much. And so they started slashing things. And all of a sudden, I find that I'm not working. I'm not lecturing. And I'm like, well, what? It was like the things that what they didn't understand were that these were the things that brought me joy. There were things cut out of my schedule, and then I wasn't happy. The reason I wasn't happy was because I wasn't. Well, those weren't the things I should have been cutting out. It was very funny. I said, you've got to take care of yourself. What am I supposed to do? That is how I'm taking care of myself. Work is what brings us joy. Real work, the work of spirit. Who's next? Yes.
A couple times you said, live the impeccable life. What does that mean to you, Marianne?
The impeccable life is, you know, to me is just another word for the life that is spirit infused. The impeccable life is the life that is, the life that we know is 100% for us. And we don't want other people to impose on us what that means. All of us, we're human beings, so we know procrastination is a lack of impeccability. Lack of discipline is a lack of impeccability. When you never read anything and you feel that kind of intellectual laziness as part of your life, that's a lack of impeccability. When you eat junk food all the time, you're not being impeccable. When you never get any exercise, you're not being impeccable. There's an impeccable life, which isn't anything where, like, today I live an impeccable life, but is something that has to do with what we are trying for. And that is the nobility of the effort. Does that make sense? I think one of the radical things, principles here, is giving up comparison with anybody else's life. It's the failure to judge anybody else's life and the failure to judge our own. And anybody who dares to judge us, they don't know anything. And it's just as blasphemous to judge ourselves. The Course in Miracles says when you feel guilty about something, that's just a way of staying in the problem. Doesn't help you get better. So please don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to set up a guilt thing here of, oh, I should live a more impeccable life. It is a matter of saying when we see certain patterns in ourselves that cause the setup all the time. And that's what we were talking about in these three things in the exercise. They are habit patterns. These are not just here and there things. These are three big logs in the way. Right? And it's not a matter of comparing ourselves to others. It's a matter of saying, I can't live the happy life I want while I hold on to this. That's what it's about. We're not talking about comparing ourselves to anybody. We're talking about, I can't have the joy of living. There's abundant life. We want God to give us abundant joy and abundant life. Am I right? Isn't that what we're here for? We can't say, I want to continue to be exactly who I am and think exactly the way I have been thinking, but by the way, God, I want to feel joy. Because what the Course in Miracles says is that the Holy Spirit changes our experience of life by changing our thinking. You can't condemn others and be happy. Does this make sense? Okay, so next thing I want to do then is say a prayer. You've already admitted to a person. And then it matters, you know, none of us can do it for anyone else. I'm just kind of like, I'm a aerobics instructor, you know? So I'm going through this workout with you, and that's the way I stay in shape, but none of us can do it for anyone else. All right, we're all just trying to be in shape. So we have places in ourselves where we don't want to be this way anymore. It's as simple as that. What is your name?
Scott.
Scott. There is no God up there going, Scott, seem heavy a case. And as you know, nobody, you know, and if your mother, you know, God's not looking at any of us and going, I'd love to give you a happy, abundant life, but your mother was such a bitch, my hands were tied. Father, I'm sorry. See, it has what we want. You know, in the Course in Miracles, he says something like, "You have a hard time accepting the fact that your part is so small." It says, "And my part is so huge." This isn't even about the nature of you and me. It's about the nature of God. The Course in Miracles says the Holy Spirit responds fully to our slightest invitation. Now, the thing is, when you say you've given it away before and you still have angry thoughts, you've given it away before. But now have you done the work that he gives you as a gift? You could say, you know, it's like the guy with the asking God to help him and God sent the boat and God sent the airplane. You know, you could say, well, God, I told you I didn't want to be angry anymore. He could say, I sent you to Esalen. That woman stood up for 3 hours talking about meditation, 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 meditation. Right? You know, all the Indian gurus, you know, no matter what you ask them, they go, meditate. And it's true. And they just sit there and you might meditate. And they're right. Because that stuff cannot not burn off. It's no different than leg lift. You do the leg lift. There's no way I can do this 50 times a day and my thigh not look pretty decent. Can't do it. My attitude while I'm doing it is irrelevant. Whether I want to do it or not is irrelevant. It cannot not work. Yes.
I feel like there's been times though that even doing all the leg lifts and swimming every day and doing all that, I'd still come home and look in the mirror and not be able to see it.
Well, you're right. You got it. You got it. You got it. You got it. It has nothing to do with whether or not it's in the mirror. It has to do with whether or not you can see it.
Right. But
Because I'm just like everybody else in this room, and if I'm honest with myself, you know, I always say that I'm not depressed about the gap between me and Jesus, but I'm very impressed by the gap between me and who I used to be. And if I'm honest with myself, and hell, with any voice, you know, other people tend to be monitoring you, I'm really clear that when I do this, in those areas, I get better. When I do the work that I'm talking about here to you, it works. When I don't do the work, it doesn't. And on the days when I go into my worst character defects, if I look, how long did you meditate this morning, Marianne? What did you do this morning, Marianne? Did you read spiritual uplifting literature before you went out into the world, or did you deal first with reading the newspaper and blah 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 blah? What was your morning like this morning, Marianne? You can, you know, it's a matter of starting to be, talk about impeccability. That's the impeccability as a student. Really look, how, taking responsibility. And that's what we were talking about last night. Let's get serious here, guys. On the days when you were angry, did you meditate that morning? How long? What was the first thing? When you woke up in the morning and your energy was most open, your mind was most open to receive new impressions, what did you feed into your mind? Are you feeding, you know, loud music and loud talk? And the anger of the world and the television and the radio? Because if you did, then of course you reflected that. Your nervous system picked it up. And then you say, well, I don't know. I said a prayer. I gave it to God. Does that make sense? That's why it's, once again, the 12-step programs, when it talks about through prayer and meditation, in the 11th step of the 12-step programs, it says through prayer and meditation we achieve conscious contact. So that's one of the things that we want to support each other in this weekend, is getting rid of this, I don't know, I did it, type of attitude, you know, that we all sort of fall into. It's just kind of like, well, I believe in this stuff, but I don't know. And with physical exercise, it's real clear. There's no mystery to it. And with this stuff, there's really not mystery either. Now, some of it's harder than others, and it's heavy, and we start to see where it came from and what it was about. And I'm not saying that in a weekend, all our character defects are gone. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, you can see it in yourself when you're on the path. And I'll tell you, if you can't tell, ask your friends. Because they'll tell you. Am I right? We hear the waves of the ocean outside, and rising up out of the water at this time is an image of the holiness of God in whatever form it appears to us. To some of us, he appears as Jesus. We look at him and we say, can you help me? He puts his arms in front of him. He says, I have been waiting for this day. Give to me your burden. Give to me your wound. Give to me your problem. I will take from you despair. We feel an opening in our hearts. Our mind blown by the possibility it could be so possible, so true, so easy. Give to me, he says, all that you do not want. And so we do. For some of us, it is our anger, our rage, our judgment, our intolerance, our temptation to criticize and judge ourselves and others. We carry these facets of ourselves, and we take these things in our arms and we present them to God, and we ask that He takes them from us. And He does. We load up His arms with what was formerly in ours. He says, thank you. And those things which had been so heavy in our arms and in our lives, as we look at Him, we see that in His arms, they disappear. They are no more. Some of us give Him our tendency to procrastinate. Other ways that we do not live life fully. Laziness, perhaps. Lack of discipline. Perhaps we do not support others as we know we ought and might. Perhaps our standards of excellence are lax. Perhaps we do not accept ourselves or accept others. Perhaps we stay in victim mode or harp on the past or obsess about the future. Perhaps we drink or do drugs we should not do. Perhaps we want to get rid of smoking or a dysfunctional pattern with food or any other substance. Perhaps we play small, or perhaps we are greedy. Perhaps we are tied to poverty, or perhaps we are tied to wealth. Perhaps we are opportunistic, and we know that. Perhaps we use other people, or try to fix other people, or control other people. Perhaps we deeply lack a sense of self-esteem or self-worth. Perhaps we do not participate fully in our community, in our country, in our planet. We do not serve. We do not do charity work. We do not do what we might do to help the world. Whatever it is, we are honest with ourselves and Him. And we walk up to Him now. And we carry these things. We walk to Him. We give them to Him. Once again, as we place these burdens in His hands, we witness as He takes them like logs from our hands to His. We feel so unburdened, for we know with total faith and conviction, with total knowledge of spiritual law, that what we ask shall be given us. As we now in this sacred moment realize that in this moment we give up to Him that which we no longer want. We want to live lives of spiritual simplicity, lives of righteousness and purity and goodness and truth. We do not judge ourselves for where we fall short of the Christ ideal. We accept ourselves where we are, knowing that in this place, it is from this place of self-acceptance from which we shall grow into who we so desire to be. And we acknowledge ourselves for the strides that we have made and the love which we have given and received. And once again, as we place these burdens in His arms, we witness. For when He takes them in His hand, they disappear. And now, allow your soul to do what it desires to do. Some of us, having just given up the facets that have held us down and back all our lives, cannot help ourselves. We fall at His knees. Some of us kiss His feet. We are so grateful for this help. And for those of us who within our minds have fallen to our knees, we watch as He kneels down beside us and He strokes our hair and takes our face in His hand and tells us that nothing gives Him greater joy than to free us to be our perfect selves. In His wisdom and His love, He has saved us now from the negativity with which we have allowed ourselves to be bound. We have been delivered from bondage, for now we are free to be ourselves.
speaking this morning about the notion of the perfect self. We talked about how it is a thought which is held in the mind of God, and that we don't have to create the perfect self. We begin by first acknowledging that it exists, that the perfect self in all of us is the same as the perfect self in everyone else, because there is one perfect self. We talked about how there have been, and theoretically are, people on the earth today who actualize the perfect self, and whose function, since after all they're perfect, is to help us get there. We talked about how it's our task not to create the perfect self, but to willingly and consciously relinquish everything which stands in front of it. We talked about how the problem with the world is that we do set about trying to manufacture a personality. What we seek is what people want to see. A woman came up to me at the lunch break who has a 4-month-old daughter, and we were sharing mommy stories. And of course, when we witness small children, it's so beautiful. They don't think yet. They have to be other than who they are. And so they shine so beautifully. And yet you can see what the worldly system does to people. You know, she walks through an elementary school. Start out in preschool where they're so adorable and they're so unselfconscious and they're so unique and full of life. And by the time we're finished with a couple of grades, particularly in the public education system, they are becoming that which in fact is referred to as men, and that's to train them to be perfect cogs in the wheel. As we mentioned even last night, there's no point in saying the problem is capitalism or the problem is communism or the problem is socialism. It's so much deeper than that. It's the corruption of our structures is so much deeper than the political level. We do not live on a planet in which, as it is currently organized, it would be allowable for the masses of people to shine. We don't have structures at this point to contain the energy of that kind of abundance and that kind of equality. And so, in our system, for instance, a few people shine. A few people. We can talk about the political or economic with us. 4% of people in the United States and 96% of the world, something outrageously. But that's just a symptom for the fact that only a small number of people in this society are allowed to even come close to fully expressing themselves. Because if you have masses of people fully expressing themselves, masses of people living at full passion, then domination and control are out of the hangar. Because when people are fully empowered, there's no need to give the power to systems that control us on whatever level. But in order to be God's messengers, the Course says, we must realize that the message is intended first for us. And as we receive the message, then and only then can we effectively pass it on. Because the message is not just verbal information. The message is coded in energy. And I think that one of the things that's very active today in terms of energy is not just the energy that is transmitted from perfect master to those of us who are not perfect master. I think there's also, certainly what I'm experiencing, my experience is that there's also very potent energy that is transmitted not just by someone who is a perfect master, but by someone who's trying. Who is sincerely trying to live the principles, and that is what we recognize in one another. Not, I'm some spiritual hotshot and you're some spiritual hotshot, let's meet. That's not what it's about. But it is about, I humbly and sincerely seek the spirit of love in my life, and I can recognize someone who humbly and sincerely seeks the spirit of their life. And it is like a spiritual underground on the planet at this time. Sometimes it's called the Army of Light. The Course in Miracles calls it the Teachers of God. And the Course says that the purpose of our lives is to be the Teachers of God. Who are the Teachers of God? Once again, as we discussed last night, anyone who chooses to be one. I said earlier today that in any problem that we have, if we
have a problem, the two things to look for is, are we clear about who we are and what we are here for? Now, the first thing, who we are, as much as what we talked about earlier today, we are not the house, we are not the resume, we are not the money, we are not the relationship, we're not the nationality, we're not the religion, we're not the sex, we're not the color. We're not the things we have, we're not the things we've done, we're not our addictions, we're not our sicknesses, we're not our parents, we're not our grades, we're not our children. Like, aren't you glad? Right? Now, the second part of the equation in life is, first of all, who are you? Okay, the first equation, which is, as we've discussed, the idea of the Christ energy, which is, that's the fact you don't have to create that. This is not about learning how to be the Christ self, it's about unlearning. The Course in Miracles says, the Course does not aim to teach you the meaning of love, for that is beyond what can be taught. It does aim, however, at removing the obstacles to the awareness of love's presence. Second part of the equation is not only about who we are, but what we are here for. Our philosophy, we are here to be the teachers of God, to teach us to demonstrate God is love. Therefore, to say you are here to be God's teacher means that you are on this earth to demonstrate love. And the word in the Course in Miracles for the technical expression of love demonstration is forgiveness. But the word forgiveness in the Course is used in a different way than it is traditionally used in Christian theology. This is not the notion of, I'm spiritual, you're a jerk, but I'm so spiritual, I forgive you. Like we said earlier, there's no bullshit like New Age bullshit, there's no bullshit like religious bullshit, blah, 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 blah. This is not about thinking other people are wrong, but we're spiritual, so we forgive them. The Course in Miracles would call that forgiveness to destroy. It's just more judgment. Real forgiveness in the Course in Miracles is the notion of corrected perception, i.e. acceptance of the atonement, as we said earlier, where you simply see what is true and forget the rest. As we said before, only love is true. When Jesus stands before the leper, his method of healing is, in fact, forgiveness. Forgiveness meaning that Jesus accepts that the spirit of the man is real and leprosy is not real. The Course in Miracles says this Course can be summed up very simply this way. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. Nothing real can be threatened harkens back to the notion of the fairy tale when Snow White, Sleeping Beauty cannot be killed. And that is because the Christ self is indestructible. It is the eternal flame. That's an ancient archetype. When John Kennedy died and Jackie Kennedy, Jacqueline Onassis, on his grave in Arlington Cemetery, there's the eternal flame. This runs throughout literature and mythology and spiritual source material. The notion of the eternal flame. So John Kennedy's body could be killed. She places the eternal flame there to remind us that the ideas that he stood for cannot be killed.
I know you've been asked this question dozens of times, but you probably have the perfect response. But help us to deal with forgiving and accepting as our brothers people like mass murderers or Hitlers or Stalins or people like that.
I heard a wonderful speech the other night by a tape of a speech by Martin Luther King, and he was pointing out that this is not an affectionate love we're talking about. Martin Luther King was talking about how important love is, not to stoop to violence and hatred. And he said, this is not affectionate love. You are not saying to an oppressed people to have an affectionate love for their oppressor. It's not. We're not talking about the kind of love that says, let's go have a drink. That's not the kind of love we're talking about. When you talk about, and this is what's called the Hitler question. First of all, the Course does say that if you leave Hitler out, you're missing the point. Because there is only one of us here, and that has to include Hitler. But in the case of someone like that, the eternal light within him was covered up by so much personality darkness that for all practical purposes it does not exist. To forgive Hitler means merely to understand that within him also lies the heart of God. Clearly the heart of God within him was not made manifest on this earth, far from it. On the other hand, the idea of our attitude towards their error makes all the difference in the world. Let's get down and look at this. You either believe in sin. If you believe that someone like a Hitler, someone like a criminal, is a terrible, terrible person, and you base your attitudes towards them on the old paradigm, the ego paradigm of judgment and punishment for sin, then that would mean that you want to punish the nation that did wrong. You want to punish the person that did wrong. Am I right? Now, anybody know anything about what happened after World War I versus what happened after World War II? What happened after World War I? Europe was so angry at Germany. They were so angry at Germany. And they wanted, they demanded reparations, war reparations from Germany that were so tremendous. Germany could not pass, they were supposed to pay so many Deutschmarks forever, basically, until told not to. And Woodrow Wilson, the American president, went around at that time saying, don't do this. Don't do this. Please don't do this. But they did it anyway. And Germany became such a desperate country, they were fertile ground for Hitler. The United States and other allies did not make that mistake after World War II. They weren't going to leave Japan and Germany desperate after World War II. They wanted to help build them up after World War II, because if you don't, who was going to be hurt? In other words, are you going to come from a consciousness of punishment or a consciousness of rehabilitation? The issue has less to do with, you know, the ego mind wants to say one sentence that we can grasp it with and say, okay, I'll put it in that box. I think when it comes to the earthquake in India, it is less important for us to metaphysically figure it out and more important for us to allow our hearts to be pierced by the event and to feel compassion for those involved. And that everything be used, once again, to increase within us the intention to so live our lives that we are contributing to the counterforce to all this evil. Now also, I want to tell you something. This is what's so fascinating. Truth has a momentum behind it that lies does not have. So we don't have to worry about numbers. See, that's the thing. If you're dealing with linear reality, three-dimensional reality, space and time as you and I know it, as we've already said, forget it, because there's no time anyway. But miracles transcend and reverse the laws of time and space. So there is such a quickening going on. There is what the Course in Miracles calls the celestial speed-up. As we are growing in these areas, the more we pray, the more we meditate, the more we work on ourselves spiritually, we are all becoming new people. We are becoming new men. We are becoming new women. It is not arrogant for us to claim this. It is humble for us to claim this. This is what they said to Jesus. It's like, how arrogant of you. Who are you to say that you are the Son of God? And that's what they would say to anyone. The ego mind would say to anyone among us, who are you to say that you are the Son of God? And that is, of all the things, it's interesting, when we wrote down on the piece of paper what keeps you from living at 100%, one of the big thoughts keeping all of us from living at 100% is, who am I to live at 100%? Who am I to live at 100%? And really, the message of the Course is, who are you not to live at 100%? And of course, the ego says, you know, if you live at 100%, you're going to be taking away the ability and the rights of other people to shine. But the Course says that the thinking, once again, the thought system is completely different. In the ego's view of the world, there are only so many pieces of the pie. One person has, another person loses. But in the Holy Spirit's thought system, the more anybody has, the more there is for everybody. So we're living on a planet where not only can everybody shine, everybody's supposed to shine. And the systems of this world in the last 2,000 years have done such a good job using everything from religion to governments to convince us that you can all shine. A few of you can shine, but we have everybody shining here. And we've bought it. We've internalized it. We are so afraid of punishment. We're afraid of disapproving looks. As women, we're major afraid on this one. This is my second book. We're really afraid that if a woman shines too, she also will not be considered attractive. Right? So we are recognizing the depth of the work, and that's one of the reasons we must have compassion for ourselves too. This is heavy stuff we're trying to transform in our little lives. It's like thousands of years of thinking. And yet, light casts out darkness. It doesn't matter how long the darkness has been there. When we ask God to come into our life, I always say, you ask the Holy Spirit into your life, the first thing he says is thank you, and the second thing he says is hold on. Because as soon as you ask God into your life, everything that could piss you off is on the way. And that is because those are the experiences that let us see just how close to Jesus we really are. Because the enlightened master, anything happens, and they're fine, they're loving, they know it's not real. Jesus can totally love even people who are about to murder him for no reason, because he knows it's not real, and he knows if they do love him, they're just projecting onto him. well, you and I. And sometimes we think we're so spiritual, we've got it down so good, you know. And then, of course, the way the universe operates is that the universe just keeps coming, and you're doing very well. You know, sometimes you need to say to people when they say, I thought you were on a spiritual path. Why is all this negativity happening in your life? You need to say to them, because I'm getting a PhD. Because the universe sometimes will say, you know, you're doing very well. You have really been loving. You have really been good. You have really practiced a lot. Can you take that? The top of one mountain is always the bottom of the next. And what we do is when someone just drives us crazy, of course, what we don't want to do is just get rid of them. But if we are still, if we can still be made crazy by that behavior, then even if we get rid of that person, it's going to come in another form. Because that's a lesson for us to learn. We are not healed until even that we can be serene with. And when we recognize, oh, I get it, I'm here to evolve, and I'm here to serve the planet. And then we get, if we have a relationship, sexual or any other kind, oh, I get it, it's here in order for us to evolve and in order to serve the planet more fully than we would have been able to were we not together. That's the key to success. And more at this time in history, anything else, you know, it's like by your fruit you will know them, and everything, every other branch is just going to wither away. And relationships that are based on, you know, everybody just coming together because of the illusionary needs rather than higher purpose just wither away. Often, somebody will say, well, how do I know what voice is talking to me, the ego or the Holy Spirit? You know, I wish it was so easy. I wish I could say, oh, look, it's really easy. The ego sounds like Annie Lennox. Yeah. Holy Spirit sounds like Frank Sinatra. It's really clearly it's not that way because they're in our voice. But the problem, to be honest, if we're honest with ourselves, the problem is usually not that we don't know what the voice for God is saying. The problem is that we don't like what the voice for God is saying. And then there's the context, as I said before, which is how can we, through our interaction, love the world more effectively? Remember the song, I think it was Helen Reddy? You and me against the world. Was it Helen Reddy, you and me against the world? You and me against the world. That is so outrageous. If any man said to me, honey, it's you and me against the world, I would say, I'm switching sides. Those are outrageous eyes. And yet it sounds so romantic. It sounds like something we glorify, like it's a wonderful thing. We're over here and the world is over there. The Course in Miracles says your love is not meant to be exclusive. It's not like you and I are going to love each other and to hell with everybody else. The new paradigm is about inclusivity. That we will love each other in order that our love might help us love the world more effectively. We will show up more fully for the world because we will be more full. That we recognize that we do not live separate from worldly conditions. We are part of the purposes of the world. God does not, the Course in Miracles says, when I am healed, I am not healed alone. God does not give gifts that are meant just for one of us. I know when I was talking with you about when I do weddings, one of the things I usually say is, I'll say to the man, she is God's gift to you, but not just for you. And I'll say to her, he's God's gift to you, but not just for you. This gift is given to you because in the presence of your love, they will become even more than they would have been. And this is the way God is giving his greater gifts to the whole world. The point of a deep relationship is, you know, if you look at the way we behave, old paradigm, you get close to someone and you find you are bitterer to them and more angry with them and more critical of them and ruder to them than you are to anyone else. It's unbelievable, isn't it? And we call that love? Well, it's because I love you that I say I'm telling you this. And the purpose of a loving relationship is that we support a person in feeling good about themselves. And feeling how beautiful they are and how wonderful they are. Now, if the person is consistently, and then a mistake we make is that if the person is consistently showing up as much less than what they're capable of, and much less than what you can exist fully within, what we get into, that's such a temptation. Because then our temptation is to start trying to fix them. And even though we're so dedicated to spiritual living, we start, you know, constantly shaking our fingers at. And of course, the lesson there is that they're not the person for you to walk with. The issue is not for you to shake your finger at them, but the issue might be for you to leave. Right? Because otherwise, you become someone you don't want to be. But you can't stay there and be part of that and witness it without turning into a monster in their presence. Does that make sense? Once again, going back to the idea that the formula for righteous living, righteous means right use of the mind. The formula for righteous living has to do with alignment of our thoughts with the thoughts of God. The thoughts of God, the mind of God is the idea of love. The question we are to ask ourselves always is, who am I and what am I doing here? Why am I here? In any situation, when we can check in with that, we're ahead of the game. Who are we really? Well, we've discussed we're not bodies but spirits. Part of the miracle, the shift from fear to love, includes a shift from the perception of body identification into what the Course calls spirit identification. We've discussed relinquishing the weaknesses within ourselves, the wounds within ourselves, by admitting them, not denying them, not suppressing them, not pouring pink paint over them and pretending they're not there, not saying, I'm not angry, I don't get angry, I've been a student of A Course in Miracles for at least 3 months, I don't get angry anymore. That dangerous stuff. You know, all these people who walk around and they talk like this as though, if I talk like this, you can't think I have rage. Definitely the most dangerous kind of people. And that kind of thinking has really created a terrible, really insidious, passive-aggressive strain in a lot of people who think there's something negative about direct talk. So they wait till your back is turned, try to stick the knife in you. So that's one of the games that the ego can play in pseudo-spiritual clothes. So we want to be authentic. We don't want to pretend that we're who we're not. We don't want to take on any kind of false positivism. We don't want to be afraid to show emotion, even that other people might label as anger. It's funny, because we quickly label an emotion anger. I had a conversation with a friend once, and another third friend, we were all good friends, but the third person said to me and my friend, he says, you know, you guys, I don't understand you guys, you're always fighting. And we both turned to him and said simultaneously, we're not fighting, we're Jewish. Simultaneously, you know, it's like the story of Jesus and the temple throwing over the table of the money changers, and some people say, well, he was so spiritual, why was he angry? But no Jew or Italian would have a problem with that thing. So we want to beware. If you've ever read the book by Bartholomew called I Come as a Brother, that general material is a lovely book, and he talks about that, beware of these ideas you have of what so-called spiritual looks like. The story of the Zen Buddhist monk who at his master's grave was crying. Somebody came up to him and said, I thought you were enlightened. Why are you crying? And the monk said, because I'm sad. So Bartholomew says in his book, if you want to know what enlightenment looks like, look at a baby. I know all of it, who are parents or around children at all. It's so amazing watching small children because they're so current. My baby just cries when she's upset. She just cries, and then it's over. She dealt with it at the time. There's nothing enlightened about suppressing something and pretending that it's not there. I heard someone say recently something I thought was interesting. They said, people who get angry, who express their anger, are not angry people. Because that was, I thought was kind of interesting. So we want to value authentic living. And so and realize that part of the growth process is being very honest with who we are, where we are, what our weaknesses are, what our patterns are. Then we, as we've talked all day, we release them, we admit them, we release them to the Holy Spirit, and we ask God that he remove from us the things in us which we do not want. That's what the Course in Miracles says is the meaning of the process of the last judgment. First of all, the Course says, this is good news. Think about it. The last judgment. No more. But the last judgment, esoterically, yeah, no more, doesn't mean that God looks at us and judges us, you know, the traditional ecocentric notion that one day you will stand before the Lord and he will judge you. I mean, one day we will stand before the Lord and he will say, oh, you're gorgeous, you're fabulous, I love you. I mean, that part is true because he's standing before us in every moment saying that. The real meaning of the last judgment, of course, is that we look at ourselves and we judge, is this or is this not worthy of me? Is this or is this not the person I want to be? And so situations come up in our lives. You know, this is not one of the ridiculous criticisms you hear in books like A Course in Miracles, is that there's the easy way out. A Course in Miracles is a lot of things, but it is not easy. And one of the things that makes it not easy is that it's a path, as any true spiritual path is, in which you're going to be made to look at yourself. You know, I've talked about how when I first did A Course in Miracles and I felt like my life was like a house, and I was all excited now because, you know, my house would get a new paint job and a new roof and maybe a portico out front. And instead my experience was as though a wrecking ball came crashing through. And a voice in the sky said, there were so many cracks in the foundation, we thought we'd better just flat this structure and start all over again. And I think that's what happens to us when we invite spirit into our lives. We are asking to be made happy and perfect. And there's a lot of work to be done because so much of the structure of our thinking and our belief systems is so out of line with truth. So this is many things, as I said, but it's not easy. And it's the path of trying to walk that path of the spiritual warrior, the path of authenticity. One of the things that, however, we come to realize is that as we do have to take honest looks at ourselves, and if you don't willingly take on the honest look at yourself, the universe has a way of making you look at yourself. Often it feels like this is so painful, but what we come to realize, of course, with any personal growth is you have two choices. You can take the sharp pain of genuine self-awareness, or you can take the dull ache of unconscious living that will last the rest of your life. Right? And at least instead of the kind of pain which just keeps coming around and you're never getting anywhere, it begins to be the pain of what it takes to pull that thorn out. You know what I'm saying? And I don't mean to sound like the spiritual path is all about pain either, of course, as we know. But I'm just trying to put in the air for all of us to remember that although the work we have to do on ourselves to grow into the people that we want to be is not always easy, I'm just trying to remind us all that we deserve some acknowledgement for the tears that we have cried, not only from the places where we did it wrong, but where we were trying so hard to do it right. We talked about this idea of the essential self, the Christ self, that is revealed to us as we relinquish our dysfunctional patterns. And then we moved into this idea, the second part of the formula, which is not just who we are, but why we're doing what we're doing. We talked about how the Course in Miracles tells us that the purpose of our lives is to be happy, and the technique for the attainment of inner peace and happiness is the practice of forgiveness. How forgiveness is what the Course in Miracles calls selective remembering. When in any situation we make a choice, and we do make that choice in every moment, whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, between the focus on love, the things of love in a situation, or the focus on fear, the focus on someone's innocence, or the focus on someone's guilt. One of the aspects of focus on love, by the way, is the focus on the present, because that's the only place your true life is found. The Course in Miracles says that the only thing that is real is God's dimension. And the only place where God hooks into the time and space continuum, into linear time, is in the present moment. The past is over, it can touch me not, is one of the exercises in the workbook. Also one of the exercises is, I surrender the future. I place the future, it says, in the hands of God. Therefore, the idea of truly giving up the perceptions of fear has to include giving up our focus on the past and giving up our focus on the future. And we are taught to, you know, the Course says, as I mentioned already, we attain so little because we have undisciplined minds. And it does take real discipline to look at a person as they exist today. That, by the way, is one of the reasons why a lot of times people in relationship will find themselves attracted to someone who didn't know them before. The challenge in a long-term relationship is to remember that everyone is reborn on any given day, and that this person who's standing in front of you is not who they were yesterday, and not who they were a week ago and not who they were 20 years ago. And a lot of times we want to get away from people because they're constantly reminding us of who we used to be. And we all deserve to have people around us, whether they just met us or whether they've known us for years, who hold a space for us to be new every day and to be different every day. As a matter of fact, the Course in Miracles says the real meaning of charity is that we are able to see a person in our minds, to hold a space for them at a level of awareness and growth which is actually greater than they've actually attained on the earth. Right? I used to be upset because I thought my mother treated me like I was a child. And of course, in her presence, I acted like one. And then the miracle that happened was that I met people who didn't know that I behaved immaturely, or they didn't have any concept of it, so they didn't know not to treat me like an adult. And in their presence, I became one. That's the role of the miracle worker, the Course says, is to see the light in people even when they're not seeing it in themselves. That you don't have to reflect back to people their guilt. They know. I mean, who among us has ever gotten better because someone shook their finger at us? I mean, in a space of total acceptance, in that space, we are much more likely to grow into the righteous person and the righteous self. Pollyanna is an interesting archetype. In this society, we use it as a criticism. Oh, you're being a Pollyanna. But that's so ironic right there if you look at the story of Pollyanna. Pollyanna went into a situation where everyone had been miserable for years. And they behaved like miserable, bitter people. They were mean-spirited and ugly and rude. But she didn't see their mean-spiritedness and their ugliness and their rudeness. She just saw the love in them that she knew was there. As we were saying earlier, she didn't stop her perceptions at what her physical senses revealed. She extended beyond her physical senses to what her heart knew to be true. She was pure and innocent, so she saw the purity and innocence within other people. Within 2 weeks, these mean people are happy, they're nice, they're married, the whole thing. She was a miracle worker. How ironic that in this society, we use that to invalidate a person. You're being a Pollyanna. Next time somebody says to you, you're being a Pollyanna, say, thank you, I really practice. I meditate, I pray. Thank you. I'm going to work on it again, I guess. And that is our function on the earth, is to be a Pollyanna everywhere we go. Because Pollyanna is a transformer. Pollyanna is a miracle worker. She transforms the world around her by only seeing love. And we have a function on this earth, as we were talking about already, to be the teachers of God, of course, in Miracles terms. As we were saying, to demonstrate love. Our purpose, our function is to forgive. And the Course in Miracles says that the Holy Spirit gives to us every day, every moment, the perfect situations in which we have the maximal learning opportunity. In every moment, I mean, we can see right here in this room. Another thing about the careers of today, you see, old paradigm. You're going to go to college and you're going to get a degree in a certain something where then you'll find a job. It's also absurd. It's so old. And it's so ultimately on a certain level meaningless. We live in a society of specialists. And in a way, what's happened in our generation is that many of us didn't get a degree in any particular thing. But the story of our lives is that we've sort of been everywhere and done everything. But you can't get a PhD in having been everywhere and done everything. But what you can become is an interesting person with an overview. You become a generalist. And a generalist can be a very beneficent force in a society. Because at this point, we have people who can explain physics to us, and we have people who can explain technology to us, and we can have people who can explain politics to us, and we have people who can explain art history to us, and we have people who can explain the body to us. But we don't have enough people who can just explain what's happening. Am I right? Michael Ventura, the writer for the LA Weekly. I don't know if he still works for the LA Weekly. He's really good. I always read whenever I see anything he wrote. And one of the things he wrote once that I read, he said, Americans don't lack information. You know, they're always talking heads on television, giving you information on this and information on that. He said, what Americans lack is the ability to, quote, connect the dots, unquote. Because we live in a society where no one tells us that that's a valuable service. It's a feminine kind of thing, you know? Just what does it all mean? The question, what does it all mean? The left side of the brain is what do we do? The right side of the brain is what does it all mean? I was reading Houston Smith, is that his name, The Great Religions of the World?
that wonderful book. I was reading about the Jews the other day, and he was talking about the history of the Jews and how, if you look at them historically, this little tribe in the desert, there was nothing about their geography or their history or all kinds of things. Why did the Jews become a major religious force? That there was nothing about their history that is what you usually associate with religious training to become major force. And he said there's only one thing that set them apart from other tribes at that time, their search for meaning. And that's what gives us nobility. Not what am I going to do to make money, but what does it all mean and how might I contribute to a deeper understanding of what it all means. And that's it.
I started doing exactly that, doing something I love just because I love doing it. And it's kind of taking over my life. And it's like there's been, it's like the universe has just put pieces into place to unfold what I really love doing in a way that I never could have dreamed of in my wildest imagination.
And it's very different than the mentality of goal setting. And a lot of people have goal setting about their careers. Within 3 years, I will be making $150,000 a year doing this or that. This is the path of spiritual surrender. It's so completely opposite of that. It's I have absolutely no goals except to serve the Father in whatever way I possibly can. Show me. The world is changing in such radical ways. The world is changing in such radical ways. That is so old paradigm. See, that's part of the control mechanism. That's how the majority of people are kept out of the kingdom. That's how the majority of people are kept out of the kingdom. Oh, you can't come in here, darling. You don't have a degree. And then the insidious joke of it is, I've got a degree, I've got a degree, I've got a degree. Oh, I'm sorry, we just have too many people who have degrees. Now, I'm not saying there's no value to education. So we didn't broaden our ideas of what education is. And you're not saying, psychology? The American educational system teaching you psychology? That would be fine. Except it's bullshit. And when you look from a spiritual perspective at the way the mind operates, you know what they teach you in school? They teach you about rats. They teach you about rats. And they're going to teach you creative writing. Darling, I have a book contract. Not how it operates. You want to have a creative writing, read Rilke, Letters to a Young Poet. Of course, that's what it's writing. Why do you write? You write because you have to. When we do commit with heart to a new path and to creating new avenues of transformation for the whole planet, new ways to take care of kids, new ways to raise our children, new ways to use music, new ways to become great artists, and great thinkers, and great philosophers, and great everything. There's an energy because the world wants it. The world is hungry for it. The world is hungry for it. And it's now getting, I mean, look at, you know, most of the best-selling books now, if you look at them, are books on transformation? With Rush Limbaugh sitting in the middle. Lest we get lazy. Right? That didn't used to be the case. Look how the world is changing. If you really want to be ahead, if you really want to know what's going to make it in the 90s, and the 90s continue to unfold, it will be the thing that you get from following your heart. So, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, all else will be added unto you. It means seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and what we want to remember is that God's will is that we be happy. Once again, what the Course calls the ego's religion has told us, surrender to God, give your life to God, and it's almost like it's been built into the system that our thought is, do I want to serve God or do I want to be happy? That we think we have to make a choice. And the Course in Miracles says, no, 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 you don't understand. God's will is your will. God is merely the highest level of thinking of love inside you. That is your real will. That's the real self, the self with a capital S as opposed to the self with a small S. So the idea here is realizing that when we're in what the Course calls self-initiated plans, beware, the Course says, temptation to a self-initiated plan, we're not going along the line of our highest development because God's desire is that we be happy. So this idea that God doesn't want us to be happy,
that we should sacrifice for God. So then we get stuck into this, okay, we're in excellent. Oh, I really understand this. I'm going to meditate more. I'm going to pray more. And then we get home. What is this pray, meditate stuff? I got to go make my life happen. Now, let's talk about what's happening here. The ego mind says, you got to do. But if you live in any city in America, you're really aware that just because you're running around doesn't mean you're not running around in circles. I just love this circle running around. Now, let's talk about the difference. You know, we live in a society where people talk about taking the bull by the horn. Take the bull by the horn. What a neurotic thing to do. Take the bull by the horn. The bull will kill you. That sort of says it all, that that's the image of success in this country. It says it all. We invalidate Pollyanna, who just kind of smiles and it all happens. So we tell people to take the bull by the horns, because that's a real vibe of success. You will be dragged. It's a disgusting experience to take a bull. Now, the image of strange thing to do. The image that the course gives us is more. The image I get is the image of a magnet. Okay? Now, if I have a bunch of iron shavings and I want to see beautiful patterns, and those iron shavings represent the configuration of my life, and I want beautiful patterns, I can do one of two things. I can put my fingers in there, try to take those little patterns and turn them into intricate iron shavings and turn them into intricate patterns, which I really can't do because my fingers are too big. Or I can introduce a magnet into the situation. And introducing a magnet into the situation will attract. That's the feminine power. Attraction. Right? The feminine power doesn't go out. Feminine power in all of us. And the spiritualization process is a femininization process. The idea that in our not doing, in our serenity, we find our magnetic power. Magnetism as opposed to meditation. And meditation and prayer are not just a matter of just sitting there. I want to tell you the story about the Italian talk show. On this talk show, and this man says, he's an Italian boxing champion from 30 years ago. And his wife was killed in a car accident. And he was challenged for the title. And he, right after she was killed, and he had a concussion. He fought and he lost the title. For 30 years, he's been holding hatred against the guy who challenged him. So this comes up on this talk show, and they work with translators, and I said, well, what would it take for you to forgive him? And it becomes this big conversation about forgiveness. And what they do in Italian talk shows is then the people in the audience just start talking to somebody, and he says,
and now one.
once again in the midst of this light. We open our inner eyes to the ocean outside this building. We started our time together by seeing Jesus and all enlightened masters and the true self within each and every one of us walking across the water, forcing the sea on their way to us. And now we imagine that Jesus himself, having made his way across the water, now stands in the midst of this room. He puts his arms in front of him. Now place in his hands both and foremost those who grieve and those who suffer. Every cell of our being is now awakened with golden power. Celestial.